Whether you drive a car, need a car, or just occasionally bum a ride with friends, you've come to the right place.
Join the editors of Consumer Guide Automotive as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Here's your host, Tom Appel.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for joining us today. Please check us out at consumerguide.com. Be sure to check out our 2020 Best Buy Picks. This list is an excellent starting place if you're looking for a new car or crossover. Also, you'll want to check out our blog for complete reviews of all the vehicles that we're driving here at Consumer Guide, plus all sorts of other car-related fun. All right, let's see who's on the line with us today. For episode 30. She is the author, editor of the Drive She Said blog. Welcome, Jill Simonillo.
You're going to call me Salmonella again, weren't you?
I just did.
I know. I am not a foodborne illness. If you're going to mess up, call me Cinderella instead. That's what I want to say.
Oh, yeah. All right. Jill, you were absent last week. You're back this week.
I hope you're
ready to talk about cars. And thanks for the donuts week before last. Those were good.
Yes. So not your Spunky Dunkers donuts, but no. The Simonello or Cinderella original donuts that were both gluten-free and dairy-free. And if I hadn't used honey, they would have also been vegan.
All right.
So there you go. And wait, how were they?
They're very good. You're just fishing for compliments now.
I just want to say they didn't suck. People say gluten-free sucks, and it didn't suck. So that's all I wanted. No.
All right. The chocolate frosting helped.
Okay. Vegan chocolate frosting, by the way.
Okay. All right.
Okay. He's the senior editor here at Consumer Guide. He's also president of the Midwest Automotive Media Association. He is Damon Bell. Hey, Damon.
Hey, how's it going? I'm also a chocolate frosting aficionado.
There you go. All right, kids, after the first break, we welcome Carl Zipfel, design manager of General Motors Advanced Truck Studio. He'll be joining us to talk about what's happening these days at GMC. You don't want to miss this. But Damon, we have news first, and Toyota made some big news this week.
Yes, very big news. It was a doubleheader product introduction that Toyota did this past Monday. And given the fact that the pandemic has nixed auto shows for the foreseeable future, the New York Auto Show, which was supposed to happen in April, obviously didn't. So Toyota revealed its latest new vehicles via an online web-based event, and there are two very interesting ones. It's the 2021 Toyota Venza. That's the return of a 5-passenger mid-sized crossover SUV that Toyota first introduced about a decade ago. This one took me by surprise. Didn't know that it was in the works to come back. And then also the redesigned 2021 Toyota Sienna Limited minivan. So these two vehicles are newsworthy for several reasons. One, in the online way that they were introduced, and two, that they are come standard with a hybrid powertrain. So sort of represent the new norm in more ways than one.
Yeah, the all-wheel drive thing, I'm sorry, the hybrid thing is really interesting because both vehicles now hybrid only. And the Sienna, the minivan market is really tight, right? You've got a couple of big players. You've got Toyota, you've got Honda, and you've got Chrysler these days. And if you're going to differentiate yourself in that segment, hybrid only is interesting. And they're promising 33 MPG combined for the Sienna, which is certainly a differentiator.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean,
for sure.
This kind of goes along with Toyota has been very clear about their electrification goals. And, you know, they reiterated it during the presentation that they did, that they have the goal of having every single vehicle in their lineup having some form of electrification option by 2025. And, you know, that's not that far away. You know, these are both 2021 model years. and, you know, 33 miles per gallon, as you mentioned, with the Sienna, and 40 miles per gallon estimated with the Venza, both really good, interesting numbers for vehicles in their segments. So I have to admit, I have seen both of these vehicles in person. I went to a super secret spy Toyota thing in November, and the pictures don't do them justice. They look even better in person.
Better in person. Awesome.
Yeah. And they look good in pictures.
They do. Yeah. And the Sienna styling is very interesting to me. It's got these kind of bulged out body side with sort of a fender flare look to the rear fenders. The other thing that's interesting to me about the minivan market in general is you would think that there would be that hybrids would be more commonplace in the minivan segment, just given their family hauler mission. But this Sienna with the new hybrid powertrain will only be the second hybrid minivan in the segment. And the other is Chrysler's Pacifica, which is available as a plug-in hybrid. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting that, and it was funny to read the Toyota press release because they sort of spun the hybrid powertrain, the non-plug-in aspect of it, as a benefit, which I guess in some ways it is, but it doesn't give you the pure electric driving range that the Pacifica's plug-in hybrid powertrain does. But the other exclusive that the Sienna has is it will be the only minivan that offers a hybrid, a regular hybrid, not plug-in, and also that combines a hybrid powertrain with available all-wheel drive. So that could be a big plus, kind of an ace up the Sienna sleeve for sure.
Yeah. Well, you know,
go ahead, Jill.
What's really interesting is both of these vehicles, both the Sienna and the Venza, are introducing some segment exclusive or some new technology. And, you know, in addition to the all-wheel drive with the hybrid powertrain, you know, the Sienna will have kick open side doors available, which I think is really kind of cool. And, you know, the Venza is introducing something called the Stargaze Panoramic Moonroof, which...
So did you get to see that? Did you get to see that in person?
That I didn't get to see because we didn't get to see the interior. We only got to see the exteriors of the vehicle. They weren't built out for the interior at that point. But that electrochromatic glass that they're using, where you press a button and it becomes opaque, you know, kind of clouds up, I think that's kind of cool. So, I mean, both of these vehicles, in addition to being a huge leap forward in terms of electrification, are, you know, introducing some really interesting technology as well.
One of the things that the Sienna will do, too, I think, is make the hybrid minivan more accessible. At this point, the Pacifica is a separate model, and it is plug-in, which makes it much more expensive. Yeah. The Sienna is probably going to start at much more accessible price points, I think, because they're going to use the same trim levels they had before. You're probably looking at a premium of less than $1,000 over the old model for this particular hybrid setup. So I think if you're a shopper looking for mileage and you don't want to make the leap to the plug-in Pacifica, which also requires a certain amount of commitment, and minivan owners are kind of busy. Do they really want to remember to plug in?
Right.
This could work very well for them.
Yeah, commitment, and to really get the most out of it, you would probably want to have a level 2 charger in your home, and that's obviously an additional hassle and expense as well.
Yeah, so the Venza 2, fascinating vehicle. This is really a Toyota's replacement, or Toyota's take on what the Chevy Blazer and the Honda Passport are, is this tweener vehicle between compact and midsize. And it's a very interesting niche, and I think it'll do pretty well for them. It's a good-looking car.
Mm-hmm, it is good-looking. I was just going to say that, yeah.
Well, my
like
parents
the grill shape and the slim headlights, and a little less extreme with the styling, and it comes off very well.
Yeah, my parents have a previous generation Venza, like the original Venza, and they love it. And as soon as they heard that this new Venza was coming out, they were like, you know, super excited. And people who own, like, the Venza really only had one generation, but people who own a Venza love the Venza. And I know a couple of Venza owners, and they are like rabid Venza fans. And so, you know, in addition to bringing those people along in the brand, like, I think you're going to be introducing some new buyers into this because it really is attractive.
And it's funny, too, that's the power of the name. This Venza has nothing to do with the old Venza, but people think of it as a you know, tit-for-tat replacement. All right. Well, that's the new Toyota news. Jill, you've been driving stuff lately. What would you like to talk about?
You know, I actually want to talk about another really cool vehicle, and it's all new for the 2020 model year, and that is the Nissan Sentra. It's really hard to get excited by a small economy class level car, but I'm excited about this one. Just kind of like I was excited about the Versa. It starts with a V. You know, I went to the Versa launch, you know, many moons ago, and we discussed it, probably a program episode like 4 or 5 somewhere at the beginning, and this Sentra is kind of a furthers the new direction that Nissan is heading with, you know, standard safety, up-level features, nice design, and really quality pricing. So the base price of the Sentra, which is, you know, just a compact sedan, is going to be just more than $20,000. And but included in that $20,000 is going to be pretty much all of the safety technology you want. So, you know, automatic emergency braking, rear cross traffic alert, blind spot monitoring. And this is my favorite. Very few manufacturers include this as standard, and I hope more will, but automatic reverse braking. You know, in a $20,000 car, you're getting automatic reverse braking. So if you're backing out of a parking lot or in a tight space, you know, you're not going to back into a pole. Like, how many times have you been driving down the street and you see somebody with like a dent in the back of their vehicle because they backed into a pole? Well, this will stop that. And so I had a couple days behind the wheel in this Sentra, and, you know, it's, even though it has like a 2.0-liter four-cylinder engine, it's like 149 horsepower, I think, it is really well powered for the size. It handles really well on the highway. And even though you're looking at an economy class vehicle, it doesn't feel that way. The vehicle I was driving had a $2,000. So I was driving a more up-level trim. It was the SR trim. And it had the $2,000 premium package included. But we're talking heated steering wheel, heated seats, you know, and all of the good, like, leatherette seating surfaces. So, like, all the good little whistles and bells that you might want. And the as-tested price was just more than $25,000. So I just, like, I'm wowed once again. I think my headline for the review of the Versa was "Go buy this car." And so I think it's going to be "Go buy this car part 2" because I like really couldn't find anything wrong with it. And of course, I'm 5 foot tall, and so it fit me really well. But I mean, Damon, I know you've driven it too. I'd be curious about your thoughts.
I had decent space in the front seat, and the new Sentra is one of the better vehicles in the class for backseat room as well. And you could even squeeze somebody in you could squeeze an average height adult in the center seat because it's got a relatively low center hump, which is nice. And again, as you said, the value for the money is clear. I believe we probably had the same vehicle you did. Was it that great Monarch orange color? Was that the car you had?
Actually, it wasn't. Mine was like a gray.
Oh, really? You had a different one? Okay. Yeah. We'll post a link to the review we did, and our tester was an SR Premium. I think it was equipped about the same as yours was, Jill, but we had the Monarch orange with black roof paint color, which looks fantastic. You have to pay another $595 for that, but even with that and the premium package and a set of floor mats, our bottom line price was $25,325 on the vehicle we tested, which again, for a vehicle that is decked out with all the luxury, you know, heated steering wheel, heated seats, that kind of stuff, and addition to that full complement of safety equipment, that's pretty hard to beat.
It's interesting what Nissan did here too. They brought out the Versa first, and the Versa was enlarged, made more refined, and loaded with equipment, and it made us wonder whether or not the Sentra was going to stick around for the U.S. market, for the North American market, and now here's the Sentra. So they're now, Nissan's fairly committed to the sedan thing, and it's interesting that since Chevy has lost the Cruze and the Sonic, and Ford has lost the Fiesta and the Focus, the Asian brands seem to be picking up their game with sedans. The big question for Damon and Jill is, does the Sentra now play? It certainly didn't in the past play in the same place that the Honda Civic does or the Toyota Corolla.
To me,
the Honda Civic still has a bit of an edge, just with that kind of the handling crispness. I don't think the Sentra quite reaches that level, mm-hmm. even with the, you know, larger wheels and tires that the uh-huh. SR comes with and that sort of thing. So if you're really a driver's, you want an affordable compact car that's also a driver's car, I would still lean toward the Civic or the Mazda 3 as a first choice. But yeah, for an everyday driver, I think the Sentra and the Corolla are Sentra is definitely at a level where the Corolla is at, where, as you said, Tom, it wasn't before.
All right. Yeah. Hey, Jill, how about a letter grade?
You know, I would give this a solid A.
Wow.
A solid A, because like I said, I really couldn't find much that I thought was wrong with it. I have to go back to, we talked about the Seltos, the Kia Seltos a couple weeks ago, where, I mean, granted, this is not an SUV. The Sentra is not an SUV and the Seltos is, but like the Seltos was just missing a little something. And it was $26,000, and it had a key, you know, not push button start. So, I mean, this really, the Sentra just ticks all the boxes for me. And solid A.
All right, there you go. All right, thanks, guys. All right, when we come back, we're going to talk to Carl Zipfel, the design manager of General Motors Advanced Truck Studio. Stay tuned.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
Okay, we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for sticking around. This is typically when I ask you to follow me on Twitter. I am car_guy_Tom on Twitter. Follow me there. I promise not to bore you. All right, our guest today boasts an amazing resume. His titles include Director of Exterior Design at Hummer, Chief Designer at GMC, and currently Design Manager of General Motors Advanced Truck Studio. He's an outdoor guy with a passion for mountain bikes, skiing, and motocross. Welcome, Carl Zipfel. Carl, how's it going?
Oh, great. Thanks for having me today, Tom.
Oh, the pleasure is all ours. Carl, I assume that you are at home.
Yes, I am. Great question. So we've been General Motors, and specifically the design team, we've been working at home and amazing, you know, right up and running. We use Skype to do reviews. But, yeah, we're doing everything that we can and continuing to be able to design and do our job.
Well, cool. I'm glad you were able to do this today, too. Carl, you're with GMC, or you've been with GMC. Now you're working with all of General Motors truck products. But GMC has done an unwonderful job of differentiating its pickups over the past few years from the Chevy trucks. Can you talk a little bit about what that's about and how the brands are different and how much further you plan to make these products more distinct?
Yeah, sure. We do quite a bit of research with our customers, even competitive customers. So throughout the design process on any given truck program, we typically go talk three times throughout the process in the course of, say, a year and a half. And we show futuristic designs to both our existing customers and competitive. And we get a lot of feedback. And one of the things that became apparent during the development of our new Sierra was that our GMC customer has some different standards than, say, a Chevrolet customer and other truck owners. So they're all about capability, craftsmanship, and performance. And, that kind of spawned the development of AT4, the evolution of it, if you will. And we really found that we had a neat success that we weren't even really expecting, that we, with AT4, really created a premium off-road truck. So these customers, they wanted a truck that had all the comfort and safety but also have that off-road capability and then a look. So it's finding a good balance for them, but very fulfilling, and I love going through that process and just getting to know our customers.
Can you talk a little bit about how the AT4 and the Denali, which is a wonderful brand for you guys too, how those are distinct and how the shoppers are different?
Yeah, sure. Obviously, Denali, you know, kind of a sub-brand within the GMC family of trucks, has been around for quite some time now. It's evolved to be kind of that icon flagship for premium craftsmanship, durability, capability, kind of that balance that I was talking about. So when we talk to the Denali customer, you know, they have these kind of standards. They spend a lot of money on a truck. They use their truck from everything from, you know, just daily driving, you know, even going to a nice restaurant or country club, all the way to using it on the ranch and hauling, you know, loads and using it as a work tool. So they're looking for that balance, and we've certainly evolved the Denali sub-brand, you know, along the way with a lot of that input. And then AT4 came along, and it was kind of a different customer. You know, they want a little bit more of that off-road look. They appreciate the little bit more aggressive off-road tires. And then, you know, combine in all the different kind of options that we do with the Carbon Pro bed and our Multi-Pro tailgate. There's a lot of innovation that we've built into the trucks for these different customers.
Yeah, I actually managed to go on the plant tour. It was probably about last year at this time, where y'all had a whole bunch of media come to your plant in Fort Wayne to look at the Carbon Pro bed. And like, I find that bed just fascinating. I think one of the demonstrations they did is they showed somebody trying to beat the bed with a bat. And and it was funny because then they showed the bat. I think I have pictures on Facebook, and I'll try and share them with Tom so that we can share them to our podcast page. But the bat was actually bent. So it was an aluminum baseball bat, and I some guys like wailing on this truck bed, and it didn't. I think maybe there were like a couple of scuff marks, but the bat was bent. So I think the Carbon Pro bed is really cool. I mean, where did you guys come up with that? And like, who is the customer for that?
Oh, a lot of great questions. So, you know, that one was really an innovation initiative during the development of the larger truck program. And we, right from our leadership, we had a green light to get innovative and use this new material, the carbon fiber. And obviously a lot of the strengths of that material are what you mentioned. It's just strong, obviously corrosion resistant, and it's also lighter weight, about 60 pounds lighter than our counterweight steel bed. So there's a lot of advantages. You also don't have to apply a spray and bed liner. It's, you know, the kind of the raw material is instantly resistant to all the kind of damage and work that, you know, a typical truck bed gets put through. So that customer, obviously, as I'm kind of tied back in, you know, to my bigger description of the GMC customer, you know, using their trucks a lot of different ways. A premium truck expects some, you know, premium qualities in the different components that are part of the truck, and certainly the bed is a big part of being a pickup truck. So we naturally applied a lot of innovation, a lot of ideas along with the new material, and obviously developed the Carbon Pro, AT4 and Denali. So we offer that option in both. And when you combine that with our Multi-Pro gate, it really is amazing. For folks that load anything up into it, whether it be a quad, a snowmobile, dirt bikes, mountain bikes, with the low step of the Multi-Pro gate, and then all the features we just talked about that come in the Carbon Pro bed option, it really is an amazing combination that's, you know, trying to raise the bar and just increasingly make the product better for our customer.
Now, Carl, I have to ask you, you're talking about Carbon Pro, you're talking about the Multi-Pro tailgate, and something that I really noticed when the Sierra and the Silverado were redesigned for 2019 is, like we kind of touched on before, just the greater differentiation between the Chevrolet and GMC versions, where it used to be just a grill and badges for the most part. You've got completely different body panels, and the differences between the Chevy and GMC versions were much greater than they were before. I'm curious, and talking about Carbon Pro and talking about the Multi-Pro tailgate, those are exclusive to GMC. I'm just curious if you hear any grumbling from Chevy truck engineers and designers that they don't get those cool features. Is there interdepartment rivalry between you guys?
Great. Yeah, there is. It's all for fun, and obviously there's strategies that we are constantly evolving but put in place to differentiate the brands. It's a great question. I should elaborate more on the differentiation. I know that was one of your original questions. But I kind of mentioned we go to do these customer clinics, and that really kind of helped make even more visually apparent as the entire truck segment and our customers evolve, the world evolves certainly. And it was clear that GMC and Chevrolet could and needed to differentiate from each other. And, so we draw a strategic line. And so a lot of the innovation and things are kind of exclusive, sometimes first year, like you see with the Multi-Pro gate, now you will be able to get that on a Chevrolet. But we kind of go through those kind of internal dialogues about how people, how the brand should roll out new technology and new innovation. So, stay tuned. You'll continue to see the brands differentiate themselves even more from each other. And I think that's one of our strengths, and it lines right up with who we know the GMC customer is.
Cool.
Earl, I got a question for you. A few years ago, I was talking to someone from Ford, and this guy famously said, and I think he's been quoted many, many, many times since then, that Ford couldn't make an F-150 that was expensive enough. And his point was that there was just luxury seekers heading into the truck market, the full-size pickup truck market, and they were looking for content that really wasn't quite there yet. And my question is, with Denali, with AT4, has GMC found the top, or is there still room for a more premium vehicle than you're building now?
Yeah, that's a great question. We certainly continue to see the market and the segment evolve, right? I think, years ago we would have balked at the kind of price point where we're at now, but certainly customer expectations continue to change, the competition continues to change, and the bar gets raised. And I think with GMC, we feel we're at the top of, the premium truck segment. So we're certainly need to be a leader there and continue to innovate and ask that very question, can we go higher and what does that mean? What are the kind of, features, everything from technology, whether that in my area of expertise, that kind of gets into like lamp technology and certainly innovation like you see in the Multi-Pro gate. So yeah, we'll continue to ask that question. I think you will see it continue to evolve even higher for the customers out there that have those kind of expectations.
In the case of the GMC Yukon and Yukon XL, the Denali trim level doesn't seem to fall very far below the Cadillac Escalade. And maybe it's positioned slightly lower in the case of the GMCs, the Sierra pickups. But what is currently the take rate on the Denali, on the GMC pickups?
Wow, I don't have that fact memorized. I'm sure Patrick or one of the folks in our communication group could get you that exact number. I think Denali is obviously a very successful sub-brand within the GMC truck family. It's been around for a long time. The customers, pretty well defined. It's interesting when we go talk to them, they refer to their truck as a Denali, not even as a GMC. So they know what they're buying. They know what they're buying. They're proud of it, right? And makes sense. Totally get it. And so that sub-brand has just been so successful for us and really is the foundation for the GMC brand, right? It's GMC is a premium truck brand, and always striving to continue to raise the bar on craftsmanship, capability, all the things you would expect in a premium vehicle.
So, Carl, I know that I believe you, when you first started with GM, you had some Corvette design assignments. And I think you've talked in the past about how you've seen a shift where, you know, the plum assignment for a designer used to be Corvette, Camaro, you know, muscle car, performance car type things. But now that seems to be shifting. And now pickups are sort of where a lot of the design fun and energy is happening. Do you see that continuing? Are there new designers kind of fresh out of Art Center or the design schools that are chomping at the bit to do trucks instead of cars?
Oh, yeah, that's amazing. Yeah, I have such a talented, creative team. It's so grateful to be able to work with the folks that I get to work with on a daily basis. But I have a number of, I'd say younger designers have been either right out of school in the last year or two up to, you know, maybe 5 years with us that bring so much talent and creativity, passion, and energy to designing trucks. They're as excited to be doing that as if they were on a Corvette or, some of the cars that you mentioned. So definitely, I think, obviously trucks are a big part of the whole segment. And, you know, when we see the volumes of trucks that the general buying public purchases, it tells you there's something there. There's obviously a giant audience out there that shares the same kind of passion. So it's so fun to be able to, you know, bring our own kind of personal background as guys that use trucks, on a daily basis and help them develop a product. Probably the most gratifying thing is just seeing the smile on folks' faces that get their new truck and they're using them and, you know, all the different things that I do in my life. I get to experience that quite often. And it's so neat just to see them enjoying the development that, you know, my team's been part of and the bigger GM team has been involved in for years.
Carl, I've got a question for you about design. For the last couple of years now, last couple of generations, all large pickup trucks, all full-size half-ton and, you know, three-quarter and one-ton trucks have gotten larger with each new generation. And is it your job as a designer to convey a sense of brawn when you design a vehicle, or perhaps to try to hide that mass a little bit? And do you expect the trucks to still continue to get larger in future generations?
Oh, great question. Kind of the evolution of, you know, almost all the trucks that you see out there in the marketplace, they're, I think what you'll see is, you know, the heavy duty trucks have tended to grow away and bigger from the light duty, where maybe in years past they were pretty much the same truck, just with, a couple like a 50 mil higher ride height to fit some of the heavier duty system in. But kind of similar to what I was describing with our GMC customer and the research we do. So what naturally, when we go down and talk to truck owners, we also are talking to heavy duty and light duty truck owners. And you see a definite split division and different expectations and wants and needs from those different customers. So the heavy duty customers talk about that brawn that you mentioned. They want their truck to look brawny. They want people to know they're in a heavy duty and they didn't buy a light duty. So it's kind of interesting, you know, just hearing some of that feedback, in the last number of years as we've developed these trucks, that yep, the segments change in both light duty to heavy duty. Do I think they'll get bigger? I think there is a point where, you know, some of our limitations are typical, garage ability, turning circle radius. So there are some limitations on how big the trucks can get, but I think you'll see us continue to try and like maximize space. So our bed, pickup beds are a great, recent point that I can just make, and that we squeezed out a lot of cubic volume in the lift just by finding areas of air where the outer panel and the bed inner panel could get closer together. So we're trying to make the most use of the smallest footprint, if you will, but certainly a number of different pulls on all those different aspects of the size of a vehicle.
Cool. Any surprises we should know about coming down the line?
Oh, Oh, geez, I think, you know, obviously I can't give away too much confidential information. I understand, you know, daily how fortunate I am to really be part of designing the future and how confidential a lot of that is. But what I can tell you is you'll continually see a lot of things we talked about, you know, the differentiation between the brands, the evolution and innovation that you see in our trucks will continue to raise the bar. And we're certainly not sitting on our laurels and, you know, resting on a, you know, leadership position in the truck segment. We know the expectations are out there to continually raise the bar. It's a competitive environment. So, just really having a lot of fun continuing to be part of that process and just work with a great team within a great company. We've got a lot of alignment on our leadership level to continue to pursue that mission that I just described. And it really makes my job so fun and gratifying. Sometimes wonder, you know, hard to imagine I get paid to do what I do almost more of a lifetime.
Well, Carl, GMC has been fun to watch for the last few years, so we look forward to see what's coming down the road next. Thank you so much for making time for us today.
Well, thank you for the time. I appreciate it. Great questions, and look forward to continuing to show all the neat stuff that my team's working on in the future.
Cool. We will have you back on the air sometime soon if you'll join us.
Oh, it'll be my pleasure. Love to.
Excellent. All right, that was Carl Zipfel with General Motors Advanced Truck Studio. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and I am Tom Appel, publisher of Consumer Guide Automotive. Thanks for sticking around. Hey, Jill.
Yes.
Jill, how can the people keep track of all your fun activities?
On all of my social media, I am Jill Simonello. So not Salmonella, not Cinderella, Simonello. And that's C-I-M-I-N-I-L-L-O. So Jill Simonello on all one word. And that's Instagram, Twitter, YouTube. Yeah.
All right. And Damon, how can we keep track of what you're up to?
In addition to following the CG social media channels, you can follow me at Damon Bell Likes Cars on Twitter.
Will do. All right. Are you guys ready for the quiz?
No.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Wait, yes.
Big news. One, I've got two pieces of news. The first one is more interesting, I think. Damon will be constructing next week's quiz. So I will be a contestant.
Oh, you're putting me on the spot. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, you got 7 days, dude. All right.
Okay.
Secondly, this is the stupidest quiz I've come up with yet.
Great.
Is that part of the reason I'm taking it next week?
You're going to want to take over after this. Okay. This week's quiz is called Trunk or Tank. I'm going to give you a number, and you have to tell me if that is the capacity of the gas tank in gallons or the capacity of the trunk in cubic feet. Are you ready?
Oh, man, you're really testing girl in the trunk's knowledge this week.
First, the 2020 Volkswagen Jetta, your number is 14.1. Is that the capacity of the trunk in cubic feet or the capacity of the gas tank in gallons?
Jill, is it your turn to go first?
Maybe, because I missed last week. I'll go first. I'm going to say trunk. Okay.
All right. You're saying trunk, Damon?
I will say trunk as well.
You're both correct. 14.1 cubic feet in the trunk. The gas tank is 13.2 gallons, in case you're writing this down.
Totally.
All right. I am writing it down. Number two, the 2020 Toyota Avalon non-hybrid. Your number is 16.1.
I'm going to say that is also trunk space.
All right.
I'm going to say tank.
No, it's trunk space. Although the tank is 15.8. So this one was really, really close.
Oh, wow.
So the Avalon trunk is small.
Yes.
It's only like a 5 Simonello trunk.
It's smallish. All right.
I would have expected it to be bigger.
I'm sorry to let you down.
Yeah.
All right. The 2020 Dodge Challenger, your number is 18.5.
Challenger. Oh.
That's huge.
I know.
Ooh, she's thinking.
I'm thinking. Now that last answer threw me. I'm guessing and I'm second guessing myself. You said Challenger, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to say Tank.
All right. Damon?
I will say Tank as well.
All right. You're both correct. The score is 3-2.
All right.
2020 Subaru Legacy. Your number is 15.1.
I am going to say Trunk.
I don't know if I should go with my first instinct and agree with you or keep it even more interesting and go against it. I'm going to say Trunk as well.
You're both correct. The score is 3-4. Damon has not gotten one wrong yet.
Well done.
Our final question, 2020 Audi A8. Your number is 12.5.
Oh.
I know. Wow. I'm like, that's a really crappy number if that's either one of those, frankly.
Yeah.
That is Audi's large sedan. That is Audi's large aerodynamic sedan.
Oh, man. I'm going to have to go with Tank.
Yeah, I think I am too.
No. That is the trunk capacity, 12.5 cubic feet. The gas tank is actually huge. The gas tank is huge at 21.7 gallons.
That must be part of the reason the trunk is so small.
I know. I'm like, that's a crappy trunk size.
Really?
for a full-size luxury car,
Today's bonus question, which does not matter. How many Panameras did Porsche sell in the U.S. in 2019? That is Porsche's largish sedan. Is it 6,625 or 27,123?
Two very disparate numbers.
Giving you some distance.
I'll go 27,000.
I will agree. I will agree with Joe.
You're both wrong. It was about 6,000.
Really?
Damon wins the first ever trunk or tank quiz. It is probably the last ever trunk or tank quiz.
and girl in the trunk lost the tank or trunk. That's significant.
So Damon, your quiz, your signed quiz is in the mail.
All right.
Yeah, I have yet to receive my previous like five items in the mail. Where are they?
In the mail. They're in the mail. hey, Damon, what's going on at the CG Daily Drive blog?
We got all kinds of good stuff as usual. We have our usual roster of reviews. We've got a write-up. We actually had two nearly identical versions of this vehicle that we tested in both California and Chicago. We have the 2020 Hyundai Sonata Limited. Great new midsize sedan. We've got... this is another interesting new vehicle for 2020, the BMW 228 xDrive Grand Coupe. That's BMW's new entry-level sedan that slots in below the 3 Series. And yes, despite the fact that BMW calls a number of its vehicles Grand Coupes, those Grand Coupes are actually four-door sedans with a very swoopy coupe-like roofline. As we discussed in the first part of the show, we've got our reports on the unveiling of the 2021 Toyota Venza and Sienna. Tom, you did a forgotten concept vehicle article. I have to admit, this is one that I don't think I was aware existed. It's the Mercedes-Benz Auto 2000 concept from 1981. Basically an aerodynamic kind of slicked up version of an S-Class with an unusual fastback roofline. So yes, I recommend checking that out, because I guarantee you've never seen a Mercedes with a roof line like that. And then we also have a very unusual. And the pictures of this car looks like it has some sort of air suspension where the air has been let out of the bags, because it looks like it's sagging in the back. And the camber of the rear wheels looks a little wonky to me as well. But up for your review. And then we've also got a vintage photo feature of a very cool British car. And that's the, actually, it could not look more British. It's the 1952, and it has a very British name too, the 1952 Healy Tickford Saloon.
Mm. Which is a great name. That's a cool color too for that car.
Yeah, kind of a baby blue. So that's a very pip pip cheerio looking set of wheels.
With a very snotty name.
No, for sure.
It's a really cool looking car though.
Yeah. So yeah, that's what we've got up on the blog this week.
All right, cool. Now, Damon, what we want to talk about now requires just a little bit of explanation, but I'm going to try and you correct me if you need to. But once upon a time, you were in charge of putting together the agenda for the Consumer Guide Monday morning meetings. And we never took the agenda very seriously. I didn't when I did it. You didn't when you did it. But you had created a series, and this is topical because we're talking about minivans today a little bit. There was a feature on the Dodge Caravan and the Chrysler. I'm sorry, it was
Town
just the Dodge
Country.
Caravan. Yeah, the Town and Country. Thank you. Called Stow and Go. And it was Stow, right. A little backwards N thing and go. But
yeah, kind of apostrophe N. Yeah. And that feature carries over to the Pacifica. And that's still a feather in Chrysler's cap as far as minivans go, because no other minivan has those Stow and Go seats that can fold into the floor.
Exactly.
The second row seats.
Right.
Yep. So great feature. Now, here's the thing about that. You were not content to leave Stow and Go alone and created your own list of. Go ahead. You explain the rest.
Yeah. So I thought the blank in blank nomenclature was so interesting. And just given the fact that minivans today I honestly believe the next thing we'll see is like the kitchen sink, that old saying that like it has everything but the kitchen sink. I would wager that somebody's trying to figure out a way to put a kitchen sink into a minivan.
Because the new Sienna has a refrigerator. So why not the kitchen sink?
That's right. We forgot to mention that in the first part, an integrated refrigerator. And the Sienna also has an integrated vacuum cleaner, which both the Pacifica and the Odyssey have offered for a few years now. So I just think there's so much more potential there with the Stow and Go, the blank and blank naming structure. So I've come up with some other possible features that a minivan could have using those names. So with your permission, I would like to read through those now, Tom.
You have my permission. And do automakers have your permission to implement these ideas?
Yes. There's a minuscule licensing fee that I'll charge, but other than that, it's fair game.
So do I get to issue a letter grade on what I think, like if this is a viable feature or not?
Sure, if you want to.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll start it out. Like minivans have the soccer mom stigma, of course, like toting kids around to the various athletic events. So I thought, how about a scrub and clean soccer cleat washer? Integrated into the cargo area could be something.
Yeah. So I'm going to give this an A because golfers could also use it for their golf shoes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Patch and pump soccer ball repair kit. Now that could be for bike tubes, maybe a little, you know, you've got a manual pump integrated into the back somehow so the kids can push it up and down and have fun with it. So patch and pump inflatable repair kit.
Okay, I'll give that an A minus. I think I like the soccer cleat, golf cleat cleaner better. But
okay,
not bad
now
idea.
Now we're getting into the really good stuff, because when you have a minivan, you haul around lots of hungry kids. Uh-huh. So what about... I'm just going to list all four of these, Jill, and you can tell me your favorite. There actually might be five here. Squirt and snack Jell-O tubes. The pudding pouch chilled dessert maker. The floating fry donut maker. There might be some safety concerns there. Hot oil in a car. The brown and crisp sandwich grill, because who doesn't want panini on the go?
Yes.
The heat and eat meatloaf oven.
Yeah. So most of those get
A-plus
like
on all of those, right?
C or below. But you know, the panini thing, I think that has some legs, especially for like tailgating.
All right. And then for hobbyists, how about the Rook and Pawn chess set, the Stitch and Style crochet set? And Tom, you've told me many times, you talk till you're blue in the face, how you believe that, figurine collectors are an underserved demographic. So,
I have.
He'll say that to anybody who listens. So how about the Melt and Pour lead figure casting set?
No.
Where is that? Is that in the center console? Where is that?
Yeah, you know, wherever you can get enough heat going to have some white metal melted down and some molds there to cast on the go, you know, just build them in the back and paint them, you know. And then more active play features, the Climb and Play Jungle Gym, the Splash and Slosh Children's Pool. Dog pool? Yeah. Oh, perfect. Yeah. People carry their dogs around. And then I just have when you do all those active things, you might want to relax a little bit. So how about the Hang and Sway Hammock? The Float and Snooze Waterbed. And the squish and slouch beanbag chair. Obviously, those are to be used not while the vehicle is in motion.
Well, I was wondering, actually, can the hang and sway be used in motion?
Proper restraints. Yeah.
No.
That's a question for the NHTSA engineers.
Yeah.
All right.
But I would give that one a solid A as well. So you've got three A's. I think a couple of B's and everything else is just plain silly. But good, Ned. Creative fun.
Oh, man. All right. We need another list for next week. Oh, so the big news for next week, Damon's doing the quiz. So I will be a contestant next week.
All right. I'm going to have to come up with some A-grade questions.
Yep. If you could, about 80s cars, that would be easier for me.
I think Jill might have something to say about that.
Yeah, no.
Would. All right, kids, we are flat out of time, but thank you very much for joining us today. And Damon, special thanks for that list of stow-and-go alternative products.
You're welcome. My All pleasure.
Right. All right. Special thanks this week to Carl Zipfel of GMC. Thanks to Damon Bell and Jill Simonillo. Thanks to producer Paul and the good folks at WCPT AM 820. They have made putting the show together during this virus situation very easy for us, and we are really grateful. Also, thanks to my radio mentors, Steve King and Johnny Putman. You guys are the best. Thanks for listening to the show every week. I appreciate your feedback. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast, and we will talk to you in 7 days.